Some of you may have realized in the news or heard in the news this week, I think it was a story that's been prominent for a number of days now. I'll just read to you a headline from the USA Today. For the first time in its history, the American Psychological Association issued guidelines to help clinicians improve the health of boys and men, declaring aspects of traditional masculinity harmful. The report, backed by more than 40 years of research, and I will put research in quotes here, they don't, backed by 40 years of research, triggered fierce backlash from conservative critics who say American men are under attack. Now, this idea of masculinity being under attack is nothing new. It's been going on for some years now. And you can search for things on Google, on YouTube, and you can see vigorous debates about whether masculinity is an evil to society, and others, social conservatives and Christians, arguing that it is actually good for society. So there is a tremendous debate going on, but the significance of this particular finding by the American Psychological Association basically directs teachers, psychologists, those who counsel young boys or men, to consider masculinity as practically a disease. The traits of masculinity is now considered something that causes harm to young boys and to men. Now, studies like this can be very impactful, not only to the world as we see it, and certainly modern media and pundits that we hear speaking, will go right along with this for the most part and consider that masculinity is an evil thing. And we will hear more of this. It is a mental disorder to be masculine. Many people consider that to be the case. I just did a search online, and just one of the articles that I found by one doctor, the article was entitled, How Masculinity Can Hurt Mental Health. That's the title of the article. And of course, this has engendered debate on various channels in terms of, is this true? Is it a mental illness? Is it a problem? And some are arguing no, some are arguing yes. But I'd like to ask you, is there a problem with men? And we'll speak directly to our own country. Is there a problem with men in America? Is the problem because masculinity is being seen as a problem? Is that the extent? Many people are saying, if you watch and read the articles, that the fact that masculinity is being portrayed as an evil thing is an attack on men and is making men feel bad about themselves. I don't know about you, whether you feel that you're under attack. I think we do recognize in the media, in the world as we know it, that it is being attacked and manhood is attacked. Hopefully, we don't personally have to go through that kind of thing, but I'm sure that in the workforce, we have to be much more conscientious of what we say, how we handle ourselves, just because of stereotypes that are out there. And perhaps we find a person making comments to something we say or do in a derogatory way. They feel that we are being the typical man. I want to read to you a series of statistics that I found was talked about in one of the newscasts. I won't read the entire thing, but I think I'll focus on the statistics here. And to illustrate that there's a problem in America with manhood. Something is wrong in the areas of masculinity in America. Within the realm of us men in America, men die 5 years on average before women do, for the average woman. One of the reasons is addiction. A man is twice as likely than a woman to become an alcoholic, and twice as likely to die because of a drug overdose. In New Hampshire, 73% of overdose deaths were men. One of the saddest situations is suicide. 77% of all suicides in America are committed by men. The overall rate is increasing at a dramatic pace. Between 1997 and 2014, there was a 43% rise in suicide deaths among middle-aged American men. We often hear about prison situations, incarceration crisis. Over 90% of inmates in prison are men. What's wrong with men in America? Thinking about boys and girls, relative to girls, boys are failing in school. More girls than boys graduate high school. Considerably more go to graduate from college. Boys account for an overwhelming majority of school discipline problems. Women are now decisively outnumber men in graduate school, and they earn a majority of the doctoral degrees. Majority of new enrollees in law and business school, medical school is women. Between 1979 and 2010, working age men with only a high school degree saw their relative wages drop by 20%. But over the same period, high school educated women saw their wages rise. Now, if we look at overall rate wages, if you count every man and every woman in America, men make more than women. But most professionals would not consider that a very good comparison, because if you compare women doing basically similar jobs as men, working the same amount, etc., women are gaining quite a bit. In some cases, are making more than men in some fields now. I'll just go on with some of the statistics here. It says 7 million working-age American men are no longer in the workforce. They've dropped out. Most of them, or nearly half, suffering or taking pain medication any given day. Fewer young men get married than they did just a few decades ago, and fewer men are staying married. Millions more boys are growing up without fathers. Young adult men are now more likely to live with a parent than with a spouse or a partner. This is not the case with young women. Single women buy their own homes at more than twice the rate of single men. And so we could ask the question again, what's happening to the American man? Is there a crisis of masculinity? Some of these statistics go on to say the majority of managers now in the workforce are women. Women on average now score higher on IQ tests than men. Men are falling behind physically. More than half, or almost half, of the young men failed the Army's entry-level physical fitness test during basic training. 70% of American men are now overweight or obese, compared to 59% of American women. They now are finding, and they don't know why this is, but and this is very important for our going on as a human race. Sperm counts across the West have plummeted down almost 60% since the early 70s. Scientists don't know why. Testosterone levels in men have fallen precipitously. The average 40-year-old man in 2017 would have a testosterone level 30% lower than the average 40-year-old man 30 years ago. It's basically fallen 1% per year in the last 30 years. And what do we chalk this up to? There are all kinds of theories. The scientists really don't know why. But we know that testosterone levels in men, low testosterone, is associated with depression, lethargy, weight gain, and decreased cognitive ability. Is all of this a problem because people perceive men to be bad, or masculinity to be bad? I don't think you can say that the perception of masculinity is the reason for all these problems. There's something deeper. Even though we would acknowledge the perception of masculinity has gone down, and people don't perceive the qualities that generally have been perceived as good to be good anymore, that doesn't answer the reason why men have so many problems. Perhaps many simply don't know what masculinity is. That's something that is becoming a major question. What is it? What is masculinity? Today I'd like to talk about what the Bible says about being men. And I don't mean to exclude you ladies, because frankly, you ladies need to know what the Bible says about being men. You need to know what the Bible says about the person you're married to. Young ladies, you need to know what masculinity really is. And I wish that I could, in the course of a sermon, cover that thoroughly, but it's simply impossible. There's a lot to the subject. We'll cover some of the core of it today. But our young ladies need to know whether the man they're looking to marry, is he truly masculine? Truly. Or have we been bombarded with a perception of masculinity that is not correct, that is unhelpful? Is masculinity a biblical concept? Do we understand God's perspective on men being men? Have society's definitions of masculinity or femininity caused our perceptions to weaken? Has it seeped into our minds? And do we see these things the way the world does? It's almost impossible not to be affected to one degree or another by the perceptions of the world around us. It's almost impossible. And it really is a challenge for us to say, I'm going to tune out what the world, what my teachers, my counselors, what media, what entertainment is telling me a man is, or a woman for that matter, and I'm going to define that based on God's vision for me. That's hard, because we're all impacted to one degree or another by what we experience in life around us. Parents, are you teaching your boys what true masculinity is? Because if you're not, someone else is. Fathers, are you exemplifying true masculinity? There are two sides to this equation, as noted earlier in the debate that we see going on. For many, they see the qualities of masculinity as being positive. Others see it negatively. I think both sides have a valid point of view. Let me give you a few examples. Boys tend to be more aggressive. Now, this is a quality that we speak generally. It doesn't mean that no girls are aggressive, but boys tend to be more aggressive. It seems to be something that God has placed inside a man, and it's something that can be a positive thing. When a man, a good, godly man, sees a problem, he will aggressively seek to solve it, to help someone who may be in need. That aggressiveness causes a man to step out, to step up first, maybe, to be the one willing to help, rather than passively step back and wait to see if someone else steps in. That kind of aggressiveness can be helpful, but it can also lead to violence. Unfortunately, there are segments of our society that see violent men as masculine. Some of the places where some young men, the people they look up to, those who are making money, they've got the girls, are the drug dealers. They're willing to fight for themselves. They're tough guys. They kill people, and they're masculine. Now, I look out over an audience that clearly we don't agree with that. But that's where that attribute of a certain aggressiveness can be positive if it's learned and controlled. But it can also lead to something very negative. And I think that's what some of these people are seeing in, quote, masculine. They're seeing masculine as being violent. What about the idea of taking more risks? Men, or the masculine person, tends to take more risks. And boys, my mother had the hardest time with me, I think, because I was willing to take risks. And you probably have similar stories. I loved to hop on my motorcycle and go out in the woods and hit the trails and do the jumps and drive fast and spin out and do all this stuff. And I got hurt numerous times. And one time, finally, that was enough for my mother. She took away the motorcycle. They sold it. And I never had that motorcycle again. That motorcycle was, at that time, core to my masculinity. I got to do things. I got to take risks. I got to get hurt, which was fine to a degree. I got to brag on what I had done, and she took it away. That's one of the things that mothers and fathers sometimes do, is they guide that risk-taking so that it doesn't go overboard and so that it doesn't result in some catastrophic accident or problem. But without that guidance, guys can do foolish things, very foolish sometimes. I'm sure we've all seen some YouTube videos of people doing very foolish things. And are they not most of the time guys? Planting their face into the mud or doing whatever is guys wanting to take risks. Again, it's a good thing. In life, if a person's not able or willing to take a risk, they will sit at home and do nothing. Almost everything that's worthwhile in life requires some kind of risk. And so it's good that men have this quality of being risk takers. But again, it has to be controlled and used with wisdom. What about another typical stereotypical thing about men? They're less willing or unwilling to express emotions. Now, ladies tend to be more adept at expressing how they feel, and that's just a general quality. Not all ladies feel the same way, but in general, ladies are a little more willing to talk about their emotions. So we have a situation where little boys are told to suck it up. Don't feel that way. You're a man. You should not have emotions. They are given examples of people who coldly go through life, even if they're beating someone else up, killing someone else, doing it coldly. And that's the example that many of our young people have in certain environments. It's right to be cold, unfeeling, and not express emotions. Well, that's obviously an extreme. We would say that is not godly masculinity. But at the same time, for a man to be able to deal with a situation, to jump in and deal with a very difficult situation and not be overcome by the emotion of it, even though sometimes that's hard, to push ourselves to handle a problem that needs to be done in a non-emotional way, that can be a very good thing. When facing a very difficult situation, to not crawl to the corner of the room with tears because this is a hard situation. That's not masculine. We would all hope that people wouldn't deal with something that really needs to be dealt with by crawling to the corner and crying. No, we have an expression, be a man. Step up. Doesn't mean we can't express emotions, but we're not overcome. We choose when we express those things. There's nothing wrong with a man crying. But sometimes we have to not cry until something gets done. And we have that role. But again, it can be interpreted badly. It can be someone can repress all their emotions forever until they just blow up and go on a shooting spree. And a lot of people consider those who do these things, they have traits of masculinity that they need to get rid of. Well, I would say that's masculinity gone awry, or character that's never been taught. It's really not really masculinity. But again, I think we can see both sides. There are young boys who are learning, quote, what masculinity is, and it's not masculinity. Certainly not the way God would look at it. And so masculinity is being demonized by many. And so we have to be careful. I think it's interesting to note that one of the articles that I pulled up regarding some of these studies, that's why I said this, quote, research. One person said this is not a scientific study. These are sociologists giving their opinion about things. And this new study that was done, I ran into an article that appeared in Forbes magazine a few years ago by Frank Miniter. And he is the author of The Ultimate Man's Survival Guide, Recovering the Lost Art of Manliness. And he wrote this article in Forbes magazine because he'd read another article that indicated what's wrong with masculinity, some of these traits that have gone awry. And he wanted to know what the, quote, science is behind studying why masculinity is so bad and why people come to these conclusions. So he obtained one of these surveys. In this case, he writes of a 21-question survey. where you answer questions based on whether you strongly disagree or strongly agree with the statement. He goes on to write that a number of the questions measured men's desire to harm homosexuals. Well, if you desire to harm homosexuals, you must be masculine. Well, where does that come from? I mean, we can say that we don't agree with, morally, the concept of practicing homosexuality, but that speaks nothing to manliness. But for many of these researchers, these experts, these doctors, the desire to harm in some way homosexuals is considered a masculine trait. What about this? The idea of let me find my place here. Oh, it says one of the questions was, do you believe that you should always accept the advance of a woman? What? Some of the questions indicated that if you believe that you should be able to take advantage of women in that way, that you're masculine. Where does that come from? It's a perverted sense of masculinity. Those who believe that raping is masculine? Well, for those who think masculinity is violent, that's their perception of masculinity. And so some of these questions are written in this way. Let me just go on down here a little bit further. One question asked this: do you believe, strongly disagree or agree, that men should be able to fix most things around the house? If you do that, if you believe that, then you are sexist and you are of all these problems, because you are saying that men should fix things around the house. I dare say that if I didn't fix things around the house, I don't think my wife would be very pleased with me. And if there's something that needs fixing, I hear about it. And I'm expected, and in a good way, she's not holding me to something I shouldn't do. I expect it's my responsibility to fix it, and if I don't know how to fix it, to go on YouTube. Figure it out. And if I can't figure it out, I have to call somebody who knows how to do it. But what's wrong with that? Why is it some masculine trait that's somehow harmful? Because men want to fix things. They want to help someone. They want to do something for someone else. Is that inherently evil? As the author here says, he says, I've always liked the expression, if ladies don't find you handsome, at least they should find you handy. I think that's the Red Green Show, right? I think that's a good statement. Another statement, if you agree with this, a man should always be in charge. Well, if you agree with that, then I guess, and they say that this is wrong. Now, I think he goes on to say that if a masculine man feels that he must prop up his masculinity by holding women down, that's not a real man. A real man would be secure in his own identity without having to hold women back. But he goes on to write in conclusion that at the end of its 21 questions, we're supposed to define traditional masculinity. I find it's obvious that they define nothing more than the bias of the psychologists who put together the study. This is, of course, a bias toward manliness that is so pervasive in contemporary America. And it's how academia and media at present define masculinity. Based on these strange ideas that masculinity is violent, sexually aggressive, and holding women down. I think you can see that you ought to understand that, especially our young people, these quote studies are just reflecting the bias of someone who really doesn't know what masculinity is. So what is it? What is it? I would say that we have to take a hard look at what it truly is, and that must come from the very core of masculinity and how it was created. I don't believe you can define masculinity without going back to Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. There is a move afoot to merge the genders. Not be a man. I don't think anyone's saying to not be a woman. But to not be a man. Let's just merge everything together. Now you can go into whatever bathroom you want, depending on whether you feel like a man or a woman today. I don't know if there's ever been a society on earth that has been so confused about gender as the one we live in today under the guise of progressiveness. Notice Genesis chapter 1, verse 27. So God created man in his own image. Should say God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created him. So both male and female are created in the image of God. And we've oftentimes talked about the fact that it takes both, male and female, to truly get an idea of what God is like. God is not just a person with all manly characteristics. Females were created in his image too. So there are characteristics that tend to be dominant in females that are part of God's nature as well. It takes both. But he did create men and women. This is a biological reality that one cannot argue with, even though, quote, wise people try to. We are either a man or a woman. Now, just because a young boy is noticed by his parents as having more compassion than his brother, doesn't mean that the parents should go up to the young boy and say, "That's your feminine side." As if a masculine man cannot have compassion. Jesus did. But today, many people associate, quote, female qualities with a boy who may exhibit certain qualities like compassion. You may be a female. You should explore what gender you truly are. Well, that's complete silliness. A person can experience some things that perhaps may be associated with female without being female. A boy is a boy. Esau and Jacob. One was more of the hunter. One was more hairy. He was, I guess, what we might call the traditional, more of a manly man. Jacob wasn't unmanly. He just had different interests. Doesn't mean he was a girl. It doesn't mean he had to re-examine whether he really is inside a female. But that's what people are being told today. But God created male and female. It's one way or the other. I'm not going to focus as much on the femininity today. I ask that you forgive that. Both of these are big subjects. But I'm focusing on masculinity because it is under attack today. And I think we need to consider, what is it from God's standpoint? And so the definition I'm going to give you, it's a working definition. I'm sure it can be expanded, certainly can be expanded, and it can also be improved. But I would introduce this concept. A masculine man dares to live up to what God desires him to be. A masculine man dares to live up to what God desires him to be. Now, we use the word dares, and many authors have used this phrase, because in this world, it takes courage to be a man and to believe what God says about sexuality or femininity or masculinity. We have to step out. It takes a bit of courage. So to dare to live up to what God desires us to be. And that's not drug dealers. It's not violent individuals. But God has created different roles. When he created male and female, he created two different roles. And perhaps one day we'll ask God why. Mr. Ken Giese, in his most recent teen podcast, talks about why God created sex. And he says God could have created one gender, found any number of ways to reproduce. Maybe we just split in half and become another person. Why do we need a man and a woman? Well, I think God had a profound reason for doing so. I don't think we probably fully can understand until we talk to God. But he did it. And he created them with different roles. Now today, in modern society, people despise that concept. There should not be any difference of roles. Yet we can look back and we can see that God places people, he has roles and expectations that he has. God gave women the opportunity to nurture an unborn baby for 9 months. And for many of you who have gotten past the morning sickness, it's kind of an amazing thing to think that you are inside of you as a new person, another person. Men can't do that. Now, I don't doubt that scientists will try to maneuver things so that the men who feel like women can bear a child. At some point, they'll probably be able to do that. But as of now, to my knowledge, men can't. But that is a role. Motherhood is a role, very important role. I know you mothers already know that. Fatherhood is a role. Being a wife is a role. Being a husband is a role. And God gave certain roles to certain genders. And it's not about equality. Even though that's hammered into us. You should be able to be anything you want. Tell that to the Danite who wants to be a priest in the Old Testament. Sorry, you're not of the lineage of Aaron. You can't be a priest. What? Discrimination. Well, God's the one that set that rule. And God, for some reason, finds it healthy that relationship boundaries, or role boundaries, I should say, are respected. But this world simply doesn't. But clearly, there are biological differences and there are different roles that God has established. Masculine qualities are those qualities that help a man fulfill the role God expects of him. Masculine qualities are those qualities that help a man fulfill the role that God is expected of him. And masculinity without God's revelation is not masculinity. Masculinity without God's revelation becomes unbalanced and harmful. So, the question we have is, where really should we go for a definition of what a man should be, the role a man should play, and the qualities that a man should have? Where should we really go? I think it's interesting to note that the Apostle Paul, in the New Testament, he did not base his conclusions about the roles of men and women, particularly in the church atmosphere itself. He didn't base it on the culture of his day. Indeed, there were places in New Testament times where, and I think I've mentioned this before, where women did rule. They were predominant. They were very respected. It's inaccurate to say that women everywhere in New Testament times were looked down upon. They were in some instances, but there were places where women were very respected. But Paul didn't base his reasoning on what role men or women play in church services themselves on culture. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, verse 13, obviously he's dealing with a situation where evidently women were stepping outside of the role that God intended within the church services. And evidently were taking control of things and speaking up, and the men were having to be quiet. But in this case, he says, no, it says, let the women, in that situation, verse 11 of 1 Timothy 2, let a woman learn in silence with all submission. And I do not permit a woman to teach or have authority over a man, but to be in silence. And again, he's probably dealing with a problem that they all knew about, that Timothy knew about. But notice his reasoning. For Adam was formed first. Now, does this make Adam better? Absolutely not. Does it give Adam a responsibility and a role of firstborn? Yes, it does. And we see this concept in the Bible. We really don't experience the concept of the role of a firstborn in society today. It really doesn't matter if you're firstborn or not. I mean, there's no particular responsibility necessarily. I mean, I guess it depends on the family. But back then, especially in the agrarian society, the firstborn took on a very special role. If the father died, it was the firstborn who cared for the family, his mother and the rest of the siblings. There was a responsibility associated with being firstborn. It was a responsibility of serving and caring for. Someone had to be in that role, and the firstborn had that role. We see that concept even carried on, the importance of firstborn, even into the New Testament. Romans chapter 8, verse 29. In spiritual context, Romans 8, verse 29 says, "Whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren." The concept, firstborn among many brethren. Now, Christ is the firstborn. What does that mean? It means that he cares for us. He's gone before us. We will follow and he will help. But there is a responsibility that he plays in firstborn. Paul says Adam was formed first. And to him, that meant that Adam has a special role and responsibility. And we might, by extension, extend that to men. So let's also, first of all, let me just point out, where did Paul go? He went to creation. Jesus Christ is faced with a similar situation where Jesus Christ doesn't even go to the law of God. He actually basically says the law of God, we're not going there. We're going to creation. And we find this instance in Matthew chapter 19, verse 5 through 8. It's kind of controversial, actually, in New Testament times among the Jews. Marriage and divorce was very controversial because the various schools of Jewish thought basically had ruled that divorce is fine for almost any reason. And so they approached Christ with this question, verse 5 of Matthew 19. It says, "And said, for this cause shall a man leave father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. Wherefore, they are no more two, but one flesh." I, for some reason, copied the King James Version in, so I'm having to translate that a little bit. It goes on to say, "Therefore, what God has joined together, let no man put asunder or divide." And so they said to him, the Jews, they said, "Why did Moses then command to give a writing of divorcement and put her away?" And he said unto them, "Because of the hardness of your hearts, he allowed you to put away your wives." In other words, there was a judgment that under certain circumstances, you can get a divorce. But he says, from the beginning, it was not so. He's going back to creation and saying, when God created husband and wife, the relationship, it was not to be, there was not to be a divorce. There was to be a faithful marriage of two, a couple. They stay together. But because your human nature, he says, because of the Israelites at the time and because of the situations they were undergoing, God allowed, under certain circumstances, for a divorce to be valid. But that's not the way God intended it, is his point. So Christ goes all the way back to creation. Well, let's go back to creation for masculinity, because God created male and female. We can go back to creation and learn, just as Paul looks back to, just as Christ looks back to. Many people would say, why are you going back there? Because Christ did, because Paul did. And there are things we can learn about, in this case, masculinity and the role of men, back from creation, in creation. So let's go back to Genesis chapter 2. Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7. It says, "And the Lord God formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being. The Lord God planted a garden eastward in Eden, and there he put the man." Notice he put him there. There is the implication of giving him a role. Sometimes we just read that in terms of, oh, that's where he ended up. No, he gave him a role and a responsibility. Genesis chapter 2, verse 15. "And the Lord God took the man, put him in the garden," and those assigned him a role, "and said," and he put him there "to tend and keep it." To tend and keep it. This word tend is interesting. The King James calls to dress, it says to dress it. But the word tend is a common word for tilling the soil. It's a common word for laboring. working the garden. It has an implication also of helping someone else as you work. In Genesis chapter 29, verse 15, it's translated serve. Serve someone else. So the implication is to work hard, not only for yourself, but to help someone else or to help others. And he was to tend it. Now, in other words, he had to do work. He was expected to do work. Now, that work dramatically increased when he left the garden, and no matter how much work he did, it was hard to get anything to grow. In the garden, if he worked, it would grow much easier. This word keep, to tend and keep. The keep means to be in charge of. It means to guard, to protect, to look after, to provide oversight. In the scripture, it's also used to attend to and protect people or property who are under one's charge. So in other words, he was given responsibility to protect it, to care for it. It also extends beyond the physical into the spiritual component in Numbers chapter 3, verse 7 and 8. I'm not going to turn there for the sake of time, but the idea of spiritual protection. Adam was to provide spiritual protection, physical protection, to look after that which he was charged with. These were responsibilities that were given to Adam. And he, as a man, was given traits that would help him fulfill that purpose. Now, what kind of traits might they be? I mean, God must have had to either give him the knowledge of how to make things grow or show him. I don't think we're just not born with that innately. But he had to work. Work, the toil that's involved, and again, his work in the garden produced much fruit, but there was still work. And God created the man different than the woman in the idea that he gave men the capacity to generally be stronger. It's not always the case, but generally, to be able to develop muscle easier than a woman. This is generally the case. Sometimes we, at camp, when I've talked about masculinity, I've thrown a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger on the back, on the screen. Not today, him today, but him back in the day. And I've said, is this your idea of a masculine man? And of course, that's what some people's idea is. But a man doesn't have to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the day to be masculine. It doesn't have to. There is a certain quality of being strong physically that is a part of masculinity. So we can't totally discount that, like many would like to do today, that to be masculine, you can just be a little weak person. No, I was a weak person once. I actually, before I was even a teenager, I got hold of an ad by Charles Atlas. How many ever heard those, see those ads? You know, the kicking the sand in the face ad, and wow, this guy was so skinny, just like me. I was skinny. I drank half and half just to try to put on weight, and it didn't work. And I was that guy. If somebody kicked sand in my face, I would have been scared. And so I ordered the program. That's one of the first only ads I ever responded to as a young person. I was going to get Charles Atlas's program to put on muscle. I found it didn't come very easily. And I certainly realized I could never be an Arnold Schwarzenegger. But you know what I did also find? I found that I could improve. Even though I was just a bone, I could improve. And I did. And I'm glad I did. I think that's something that we ought to do as men, as boys, improve. We may never be what someone else wants us to be, but just improve. It's an aspect of masculinity. There's nothing wrong with a man or a boy seeking to improve himself physically. God put Adam in a garden and expected him to work, which involved physical endeavor. And today, unfortunately, I can theorize in my own little mind that perhaps we lose what we don't use. And if there's no need for testosterone because there's no heavy lifting, there's no work, it's just not needed. They've proven that if you can lift weights, do things that are hard, you may work on the farm, whatever it is, you're straining yourself in various ways, it builds testosterone. That's probably why it's going away. Everyone exercises their fingers on keyboards. And they may be working, but the type of work we do today as men isn't what Adam did in the garden. It kind of makes sense that testosterone levels would be going down because we're not straining ourselves. And that's, men were created to strain themselves, to work. Teenagers, strain yourselves. Do some work. Do some weightlift. Do something to get the muscles working. Remember that God created man originally to tend the garden, to keep it. There's something in that creation that's still valid today. And when we don't appreciate it, we lose part of who we are. Verse 16 of Genesis chapter 2 says, "And the Lord commanded the man, saying, 'Of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat you shall surely die.'" Now, for the sake of time, I'm not going to read through the rest. We know the situation. We know that the serpent approached Eve. But we also have the idea here that God told Adam the moral teaching. Adam passed that on to Eve. And he had that responsibility because he was to care for, he was to protect, he was to guide. And Eve, in hearing that from Adam, perhaps that's why Satan approached Eve, is because maybe he knew that Adam might resist a little more since he heard it directly from God. But I don't know why he approached Eve, but he did. But in the end, they both sinned. They both sinned. But who did God hold accountable? Well, he held accountable all three, Satan and the woman and the man, Adam and Eve. But it's interesting that when they were hiding in the garden in verse 9 of chapter 3, it says, "Then the Lord called to whom?" Adam. Adam had responsibility. He was to tend, he was to dress, he was to care for not only the garden, but for his family. And he had failed in that responsibility. He'd given in himself to sin. So we have this idea. In fact, it's been only since the Industrial Revolution, basically, that the modern society as we know it, that the husband and the man doesn't have a major role in teaching their family. Men were taken away from the farm, from the home. They were put in industry. Now, the man oftentimes did very little to teach the morality and various things. But before that, throughout much of history, the man has been intricately involved with teaching. And Adam obviously was put there in part to teach and take responsibility. Masculinity takes responsibility for helping others improve, not harming them. Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. We see here that the way God created Adam and Eve, the role he gave them as husband and wife, it's still very meaningful because he created it because of a spiritual relationship that exists today between Jesus Christ as the husband and the church as his wife. So it was a profound thing that he created man and woman, husband and wife. It reflects something in the spiritual world. And in verse 25 of Ephesians 5, it says, "Husbands, as the male and as the masculine one, love your wives." So often, the idea of masculinity in some people's minds isn't to love, but to get your way with, to use, to abuse. It says, "Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ also loved the church, gave himself for her." This is a masculine quality, to serve and give. It doesn't mean that only men have it, but it's a responsibility that men have within their families. It says that he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of the water by the word, that he might present her to himself a glorious church, not having spot, wrinkle, or any such thing, that she should be holy without blemish. Notice that concept. A masculine husband helps improve and encourage his wife and his children, and is involved, just as Christ is involved with the church. It says, "So husbands ought to love their own wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself." In other words, you're doing something good for yourself if you show love. "For no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as the Lord does the church." This is masculinity, to nourish and cherish. That's not what the experts today believe. But that's what the Bible, this is the way Jesus tends to and protects his wife, the church, you and I. It says, for this reason, man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Of course, that comes straight from the beginning. This is a great mystery which I speak concerning Christ and the church. Nevertheless, let each one of you in particular so love his own wife as himself, and see that the wife, and let the wife see that she respects her husband. In our day and age, modern feminists and such, they do not respect the role of the husband. That's what the scripture says. That feminine, truly feminine women respect the role that God gave their husband, because the husband will be judged by God on how well he fulfilled that role of nourishing and cherishing. I think we can all see how concepts of modern masculinity have gone astray in so many ways. Most of the time, we consider nourishing and cherishing to be a female trait in this world. According to God, it's not. It's something that a manly, masculine husband does for his wife and for his family. Now, as I mentioned, some of these qualities of masculinity, these qualities that help a man fulfill the role that God expects of him, they're shared with women. There's nothing wrong with that. I've known many courageous women, and I've known many men who are sensitive to the needs and the needs of others and the sufferings of others. Christ set the example in that way. He was all these things. But I tell you what, the difference between masculinity, there's one major difference. We may have various attributes that Jesus Christ had, but one thing a man does, and you young men, a masculine person recognizes they have a responsibility toward others, just as Adam did in the garden. And I'll just give you one example. If my wife found a snake in the basement, some of you ladies are going to come over next week and sleep in the basement. I'm just kidding. There's a lower level. If she found a snake in the basement, there's a snake. Gary. And I say, honey, it's your turn. And she won't like that. But I'm not being a man. And there's a lot of people in this world who think that what I just said is sexist. Arrogant. But you know, God gave the masculine man the role and the responsibility. And to opt out is simply ungodly, because that's not the way God created it. It's not the order that God put in place. Now, if I'm not home and that snake's down there and one of our daughters was a little baby down there, I bet you my wife would hop right on that snake and take care of the problem, because she's going to defend the baby daughter. But as long as I'm there, I have a role to play. And there's nothing wrong with that role. It's actually a role that God established for men, to be a protector, to care for. And that is, there's nothing wrong with that. But again, it doesn't mean she's not courageous. But I have a responsibility of exercising that courage in service to her. She would have a responsibility of exercising that courage in service to our daughter if I weren't around. So we all have similar qualities, but we have roles to play. And the qualities that we have, sometimes certain qualities help a man fulfill those roles, whether it's to be a little more aggressive, to be a little more of a risk taker. Some of the qualities we oftentimes associate with masculinity actually help us fulfill our role that God has given us. Again, ultimate and true masculinity, look at Jesus Christ. He was the epitome of service, sacrifice, love, compassion, hard work, boldness, courage, physical stamina, wisdom, and godliness. That is the epitome of masculinity. And again, some of these things, obviously, these things women share as well. But as masculine men, we have a responsibility that God has given us in a role that he's given us. And it's a distinct role from that of motherhood and femininity. If you look at the example of the apostles and what they how they lived their lives, there are many examples of courage. I went to the library to see Do they still have any books on manliness? Or is it out of, is it completely, well, they probably would start taking them out now. But Tony Dungy, Uncommon Manhood. This is something that we as men can actually consider. Reading some of these things, we can consider, what is it to be a man? I'm not saying, now this obviously isn't the Bible. We obviously get a lot from the Bible, but these are some of the qualities that many people associate with masculinity. Character. This is just reading his contents. Honesty and integrity. Humility and stewardship. Courage. How to treat a woman. Fatherhood. And fulfilling that role as a father. The respect for authority. Importance of friendship. Counseling. Taking counsel. Influencing others in a positive way. Mentoring others. The power of our thoughts. How we allow our mind to think. The importance of education, athletics, career, work, and money, goals, and risk, the use of alcohol or drugs, how we deal with failure. That's just a little portion of his small little book called Uncommon Manhood. I've got another one that was in my local library, Dare to Be a Man. So these books are out there. I don't know how long they will be because they're going to become politically incorrect. Very quickly, probably, but they're out there now. And there's a lot of things that have been written that can be very helpful. But we have the Bible primarily, and that is an extremely appropriate source to go to. I want to refer very quickly before we close to an article that it was written by columnist Peggy Noonan. I'm sure many of you have heard of Peggy Noonan. She's been around writing articles for a long time, and she wrote an article back in 2001 after the September 11th ordeal. And I thought it was very interesting the way she approached it. And I won't read it because it'd be too long to read here. But it's entitled, Welcome Back, Duke. You know who Duke is, right? John Wayne. She talks about how the effeminate men who became stars after John Wayne killed John Wayne with a thousand cuts. Kill the image of John Wayne and laugh at him and laugh at the effeminate side of man and make that what's normal. And she mentions that she had a part in that because back in the 70s, she says, I was that feminist who, in trying to get my luggage in the overhead compartment, told the man who stood up to help me to sit back down. I can do this myself. And she laments now that man may have never tried to help a woman again. She's not the same person she was back then, but she acknowledges that we destroyed the concept of masculinity. And she actually talked about, she has a very moving article here of how she and other kings and queens of New York City, the lawyers, the magazine editors, the movers and shakers, found themselves applauding the firefighters, the police officers, and the men who would dare to have the courage to step into those buildings and to rescue people knowing they may die. She says, masculinity is back in style. And she says, we were applauding them. We couldn't do anything else, she said. We couldn't help, but they were doing it. These are the men who built the city. They take care of the problems when something really goes wrong. And she said, manhood is back. Well, how long did that last? How long did that really last? Because it's not back anymore. Now the very qualities that drove these men to save those lives are masculine. They're risk takers. They're aggressively pursuing danger. No, they're aggressively pursuing to help someone who's in danger. But manhood has fallen back out. And she wrote a very good article. As a former feminist, you may say that didn't treat men and appreciate manliness and masculinity. She came to see that there's a place for it, and certainly there is. 1 Kings chapter 2, we'll just conclude a couple of scriptures. 1 Kings chapter 2. David, as he's dying, he makes a statement to Solomon. 1 Kings chapter 2. And verse 1, in the days of David, then the days of David drew near that he should die, And he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, and prove yourself a man. Now, he obviously was male. What does it mean to prove yourself a man? To show that you're capable of doing the right thing. He goes on to say, prove yourself a man and keep the charge of the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, his testimonies, as is written in the law of Moses, that you may prosper in all that you do wherever you turn. He's telling him to be a man. Nothing wrong with being a man and living righteously as we do it, fulfilling the role that we have. You can turn back quickly also to 1 Corinthians 16. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 3. I'm going to read it from the English Standard Version, which actually is a very accurate translation. If you look at the word, you'll find, let me read it first. It says in 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13, be watchful, stand firm in faith, act like men, be strong. Let all that you do be done in love, or to love. Now, this version says, act like men. The New King James Version, what does it say, somebody? What does it say? Be strong? Brave. Be brave, be strong. The be strong is, the be brave, I should say. If you look at the word in the Greek, it actually is the word for man. Be a man. There's nothing wrong with that concept. This world is telling us there is, but there is nothing wrong. I really believe that one of the true reasons society is the way it is today is because men have stopped being men. Because masculinity has gone out of style. And if true godly masculinity would come back, it would make a tremendous difference. And within the church and within our families, true godly masculinity should be something that is taught, that it's exemplified. Young ladies, respect the men with true masculinity. Don't be affected by the politics and the world and the pundits around us. Remember, God created us. He created us a certain way for a certain reason. The more we acknowledge our purpose and try to live up to that, the more successful we will be in our lives, in our relationships. Remember, biblical masculinity encompasses qualities that enable men to live up to God's purpose for them, and help others, men, women, and children, fulfill God's purpose for them. God and all the world needs true masculinity.